It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome into the Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. My name is D-Bro. I'm your host, as usual, and riding with me to talk about this game-by-game breakdown for Week 8 is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, what's up, man? You ready to saddle back up?
Yeah, dude, I'm feeling good. We usually record this podcast, early Friday afternoon slash late morning, and recording this Thursday night right before the Thursday night game kicks off, so I can, not have the game distracting me. I can talk some football and then go back and see what I missed and see how tilted I'm going to be. It's going to be awesome.
Well, the whole reason we're doing this, we want to get this out to the masses, get this out early, and we had to do this to get a special guest. One of our FTN daily brethren. This dude is coming off a 150K hit in week 7, man! So you got to go head over to Twitter, follow this savant at Fantasy Guru Drew. Drew, what's up, man? I know this is not a usual Saturday night, so the drinks are not out, everything's not flowing, but we got to talk about these game by games. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. You're right. No drinks flowing. I will do my best to keep it professional. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Dude, so without going on too long, I don't want to bury the lead in here, man. Like, you just hit in week 7 for 150K, and we were talking about this before we turned the mics on. So you got 150K in your pocket, the six figures, but there was also 150K left on the table. You had a horrible beat, man. Walk all the listeners through kind of like, one, let them know what a 150K lineup looks like, and just kind of lay it out for us, man. Tell us how your Sunday went.
Thanks, man. Yeah, so to your point, it was brutal. I came into the game, we talked a little bit about this, right? I came into the game pre-game looking through my lineups, looking through some of the high dollar lineups, the Wildcat, threw in about 20 into the Wildcat, right? And I was looking through it, and the top one had a guy remaining. It was Chris Carson in my flex, right? I tweeted this out that I looked through everyone who was ahead of me. I realized actually only one person had even a player to go ahead of me. And crazily enough, it was a running back. And crazily enough, I calculated the salary left, and it was the exact dollar that they needed for Chris Carson. Right. So I tweeted this out and I was like, I'm not going to play for second. A little ironic when we talk about the outcome. But I said, I'm not going to play for second here. I'm going to pivot to Tyler Lockett. And in full transparency, I had about 35% of my lineups with Tyler Lockett. So that was someone I certainly liked that week. I had about 15% Chris Carson. That kind of just worked out in that lineup had Chris Carson. Obviously, I didn't want to play for second. So I pivoted to Tyler Lockett. I needed about 31 points in order to catch up to first. I also knew that I needed the game to kind of stay relatively sane because as I started looking down behind me, there wasn't anyone too close, to be honest, with a lot of minutes remaining. Maybe one guy here, one guy there. But I had to scroll down a good, 40, 50, 60 points lower than me before two players even showed up, right? So I pivoted to Tyler Lockett. And I knew that I needed 31 points at halftime. He already has two touchdowns over 100 yards receiving for something like 40 points. And I'm crushing it for 300 grand up by 18 points on the closest guy on first. And I look well below and no one's even close to me with guys remaining. At that point, you know me, Derek, I'm kind of analytical as we discuss everything Saturday nights. At that point, I'm kind of calculating my odds at 80% plus. We go through the rest of the third quarter. Tyler Lockett keeps getting catch after catch. No one's doing anything crazy. By the start of the fourth quarter, I'm like, I think I'm 95% sure that I'm gonna win this for 300 grand. And I'm not spending the money anywhere. I'm keeping it realistic. I'm having a glass of wine, trying to relax myself a little bit, watch this game. And then as the game continues, it was about 6 minutes left. A couple lineups start catching up. And I realized that I need to avoid about 16 more points from Kyler Murray. 6 minutes left in the game. Should be fairly doable. The game's kind of dwindling down, right? A couple fluke plays, long story short, because I've been rambling on too long here. Game goes into overtime. Field goals missed, botch plays, first downs missed, all across the board. Kyler Murray catches up and beats me by 0.3 points. And that's where it is. Yeah.
Oh, man. I know. We were all sweating this in the Discord, in the Slack. Everybody was rooting for you, man. And it is such a damn bad beat. And I'm not trying to throw salt in the wound, but...
Stupid, yep. Cliff Kingsbury.
Yep. Just brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal, man. I mean, look... We got to talk about it just because, like, I mean, one, this is a mega hit. It was a fantastic lineup. I mean, we talk about this, and if anybody is not, you're listening to this podcast and you're not signed up for FTN Daily right now, you're missing out on all kinds of stuff. Like, we're giving away the freebie action here. We're going to go through the main slate game by game like we always do. But the thing is that, like, between plays and process and all of us in the Discord weekly laying out why we are on players that we're on and correlations. And, all of that is just amazing as far as just from the strategy standpoint and what Drew did to even have the salary. Because I think that I don't want that to get lost here, that you still had the salary. You had that built into your lineup where you could even pivot to lock it there at the end. Because a lot of people would make their lineups and they would say, okay, I've got to get part of this late hammer game, and what am I going to do with it? But the fact that you built in the extra 200 to be able to move from Carson over to Lockett if you got in that situation is one of the sharpest things that I do not want to get lost in discussing this entire game and everything.
So, yeah, I totally agree. So, I miss the fact that Sunday Night Football games aren't part of the main slate anymore. That reason, for some game theory, for a little extra sweat, right? But I think this is applicable to even just the main slate as it stays right now, right? If you are playing a big GPP, and I'm talking 5,000 entries, 10,000 entries, 100,000 entries, you name it, right? If you, in an early game, botch one of your players, and he comes in for 2x salary, 3x salary even, right? You're probably in a tough spot, right? You pick a 4 or 5 grand player and he scores 8 to 10 points and you're kind of screwed, right? There's no way that you're going to ship unless you do something crazy for your later games, right? And I'm talking low owned plays who, this wasn't obviously a Tyler Lockett situation, but it's so important to actually think about your lineup, think about how you might compare with others and make plays that'll just expand your chances of winning later on, even with a misplay.
Yeah, and I think it's just late swap is still one of those things that you gain an edge on the field, especially if you're willing to sit here and risk it for the biscuit and go with these lower on plays. Like, I had a sweat towards the end of Sunday, and I was like, okay, do I stay with Keenan Allen, who I knew was higher owned walking into the later games, or do I pivot to somebody like Tyreek Hill, who carried less ownership, but I wasn't that big on the matchup. And I was like, I looked at above and below me, and I was like, you know what? I'm staying with Keenan Allen. I think I've got a good enough shot. And he looked like he was about to go nuclear. But it's one of those things that where you're just like, I've got to have room to move around with my lineup. Because if you really want, and anybody that's playing GPPs, if you really want to get to that top 2%, that top 1%, and take one of these damn things down and pad your pockets, that's what you got to be thinking about. And it's one of the things that I still feel gets overlooked with DFS. It's not talked about even enough, as much as we talk about theory and we talk about correlations and mini stacks and skinny stacks and all these other different things and pace and totals and all that kind of stuff. Late swap is still something that you versus the field, it is still vastly underutilized. So it's something that we got to bring up here. But like I was talking about, if you are not in the FTN Daily Discord, you are not signed up for the site, you need to rectify that right now. Head over to FTNDaily.com, get signed up with the promo code FTC, save 10% on your sign-up today. All right, fellas, we have talked about process, we have talked about last week, we have got to move over to Week 8 and go through all of these games, giving our punts, pivots, plays, stacks, all of that goodness. So first game that we're going to head to is Pittsburgh is going to take on the Ravens. The over-under is set at 46.5. Baltimore is favored by 4. Drew, kick us off here, man. Who do you love out of this game, if anyone?
Yeah, so one thing that I want to comment on my lineup, and even just moving forward on my 150 lineup, and even just moving forward in the way that I'm building any GPP lineup, we are seeing more and more, because obviously more and more stats are being run and recording of this, we're seeing more and more how important correlation is. I am not building a GPP lineup anymore unless it is a 3-1 minimum, right? 3-1, for those of you who don't track this, quarterback, maybe 2 receivers, 1 receiver, 1 tight end, and in my lineup, 1 running back, 1 receiver, and bringing it back with most likely a receiver, sometimes a tight end or a running back, right? We're seeing more and more that in order to take a big GPP down, that's what you have to do in this situation. And that's what I do in every single GPP moving forward. So I just wanted to call that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the Steelers and Ravens, there's a lot of interesting pieces here. I know I listened to you guys' podcast earlier in the week. James Conner was a focal point. He was also a focal point in my lineup. He has a ton of opportunity in this offense, and he continues to have a ton of opportunity, and his price is not even crazy. At 6,400 on DraftKings, I'm going to consider him every single week. Matchup not great. I'm still going to consider him because I know he has the upside. I'm a little concerned with his goal line activity, which probably cost me a little bit this weekend. I'm also a little concerned with his pass down work, a little something that used to be pretty impressive in the Le'Veon Bell days and even in his early days, which isn't as impressive anymore. But it's something that I'm going to monitor and include potentially in my GPPs this week. The other thing, I'll toss it to you guys, the other thing that I want to call out, a tweet that I just came across right before jumping on air, Mark Ingram is fairly banged up right now, and there's a chance that he misses. Again, to Adam's point earlier, this is Thursday night. We don't know injury situation, something to keep in mind. I'll toss it to you guys what you think.
Adam, what do you like out of this game? Because I know this game as a whole for me is pretty much, there's one play out of this game that I am targeting as it might be one of my favorite one-offs for the entire slate. But Adam, do you like this game? Are you willing to stack this thing up?
I think James Conner is like interesting at his price. I do agree with Drew. Like, he's just a little bit too cheap given the fact that he's locked into 18 to 22 touches. I already know who your target is in this game, D-Bro, so I'll let you talk about him in a minute. But yeah, I mean, Mark Ingram hasn't practiced yet this week, so very, very, very iffy for Sunday. I probably still wouldn't like consider J.K. Dobbins a must or anything, because he's just gonna, it's gonna become a 3-man backfield to a 2-man backfield. It's gonna be a full-on committee. It's gonna be a competitive game, you'd think, so that would mean they both play, whereas when the game's out of reach for in Baltimore's favor, Gus Edwards is the beneficiary, and if Baltimore's ever behind, they, you know, Dobbins is the guy. But yeah, like, I don't, against the best run defense in the NFL, neither would be a priority by any means. I'm not really crazy about paying up for Lamar Jackson in this spot and on this slate. And then you have the Steelers receiver situation where it's not a really good matchup for any of them. Deontay's clearly been the one when he's been active. In his 3 full games before leaving with an injury, he's had double-digit targets in every single game. And just based off his potential when he's healthy in this offense, he's probably underpriced too. But again, these are 2 good defenses. So really, and I agree with you, D-Bro, the main guy that I'm interested in is the main guy you're interested in.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was on Connor last week. I think most of the running backs in this game I'm probably off of. And I'm curious if J.K. Dobbins gets some popularity as the week goes on. And so my whole thing with J.K. Dobbins, he's at 4,600. I get the play. But for a guy that you're looking for, his ceiling is probably in the neighborhood of like 14 to 15 touches, because we know that Gus Edwards is going to be involved. I want efficiency. I want breakaway ability. Does Dobbins have that? Absolutely. Like, he's second in breakaway run rate right now. I think that's in his wheelhouse. But the other part of that is that, like, Pittsburgh is still freaking good against the run. So you're really going to play him hoping that he busts 1, maybe 2 runs. If he doesn't do that, if he doesn't get 2 touchdowns, he's not going to burn me. The guy that I want to mention here, and probably my favorite play, one of my favorites on the entire slate, is Hollywood Brown. And for all of the things, and everybody in past weeks has been like, it's Marquise Brown week, baby. It's Hollywood time. Let's go. I haven't been there. I have not played Hollywood at all. So me diving in and wanting to play him in this spot, Adam and I have talked about the Steelers and being able to beat them deep in previous weeks. We talked about that with them versus the Eagles. And it was right process, wrong dude. I was on Hightower that week, and I was not on Fulgham. This is the spot for Marquise Brown to blow up. Their outside corners have had a ton of problems with speed. We know that is exactly what Marquise Brown is all about. Like, Slayton ate them up for 102-2. Fuller got them for a long touchdown. Fulgham, like I said, went 152-2. A.J. Brown went over 150 yards for a tutty. I think that this is a spot where Marquise Brown can get behind this defense at 6,100 on DraftKings. He's basically kind of in no man's land. I think that he's going to be a sub-10, sub-5% play. And, dude, I got a ton of interest. But, Drew, tell me your thoughts here, man. Are you willing to get some exposure to Hollywood this week?
Yeah, I am. This isn't a game that I'm interested in stacking in. To your point, and Adam's point, both of these defenses are fairly solid, right? At most, I'm picking one to two players in this game. Hollywood Brown, potentially James Conner, potentially J.K. Dobbins, if we get a little bit more clarity. I'm not even opposed to Gus Edwards. I mean, he's been getting 5 to 14, I think, is his max. He's not getting any pass down work for the most part. So, you know, those are all areas to consider. Defenses are essentially a scratch off. Both of these two teams aren't really turnover prone, and they can put up a lot of points quickly. That can go wrong really quick. Tight end, Mark Andrews potentially. But for the most part, this is a stay away game for me. We'll talk about weather and other games in a couple games. We're going to have to find some games that we want to stack and pick multiple pieces from. This is not one of those games for me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Adam, are you loving some Hollywood this week?
Yeah, I would like him a lot more if he was lining up as the left receiver, because that's been in particular the matchup we've been exploiting, right? That's where mm-hmm. you know, Fuller's lined up and Fulgham's lined up, but still, it's also more of a team thing where they're just giving up a ton of big passing plays. The Steelers are allowing just over 11 yards per completion, which is bottom eight actually in the NFL. So they've been worse than teams like Detroit and New Orleans, who've given up a lot of big plays in that regard this season. So yeah, Hollywood Brown is the main piece from this game. And the thing I like about him is he's always interesting in tournaments because he has that upside. His floor has been higher than you think. He's had over a 20% target share in like every game, and he's priced $200 more than Brandon Ayuk, who's probably going to be popular. So I like him a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so moving on. Jets are going to head and take on the Chiefs.
The Jets are up by 16 right now. They're actually winning already. It's crazy.
Kansas City is favored by 19 in this spot. Oh, my gosh. The over-under is set at 48.5. I'm going to kick this off, man. Like, I don't have a lot of interest in stacking this game. I just don't think that the Jets put up enough fight. Do I think that the Chiefs get points in this game? Yes. Are they going to throw to get up in this game? Yes. Because they have the seventh highest passing rate in neutral scripts. They're throwing at 62% of the time. My whole thing about it is I don't believe the Jets can absolutely put up a fight in this. The Chiefs have been pressuring at a really, really high rate. Sam Darnold has not been good. We are going, I can't throw money behind an Adam Gase-led team. Like, I just can't do it. And for everything Drew was talking about, stacking and getting correlations, this is not a game that I'm looking to stack. But I do think that we've been waiting patiently for the blow-up spot for Tyreek Hill. This could be it, man. I'm talking about they got to throw to get up, and they're willing to do that. I think Tyreek Hill could explode in this. We've talked about the outside corners for the Jets. They're absolutely terrible. Pierre Desir is horrible. Like, 72% catch rate, 5 touchdowns in his coverage. Bless Austin, poor soul. He can't stay with Tyreek Hill if he gets matched up with him.
Could you say bless his soul?
I have in previous weeks. He runs a 4.7. There's no way in hell he can stay with any one of these Chiefs guys on the outside, but Am I crazy? Drew, are you willing to stack this game?
So your thought process right there was the exact same as my thought process. And which is no surprise to you and I, we've referenced our Saturday night Discord chats for a while. For those of you that aren't part of them, Derek and I spend at least a couple hours. We start at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific time, and we chat for hours building lineups. And it's crazy, but Derek and I are essentially aligned on every single play almost every single week, right? So your thought process right there is exactly how I first approached this game. All right, yeah, they have a almost 20-point spread. There's no way that the Jets keep up with them. There's no reason to stack as there's no way that the Chiefs really push it, right? At the same time, if I'm doing my math correctly, the Chiefs are projected to score 5 touchdowns. That's pretty damn good for an offense. And I'm really interested in rolling something like Mahomes. We have to figure out the running back situation. I'm not sold that Le'Veon's going to get a lot of touches. But maybe we throw a little CEH in there as a 3-man stack with Tyreek or Kelsey even. For those 5 touchdowns, there's a good chance that we wrap up 4 of them right in there, right? Bringing it back, maybe a little bit tougher, and we can see. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that pairing Mahomes and Tyreek Hill is super interesting because a lot of people will just look up to Mahomes at the high end and be like, oh, they're going to win by 30. I'm not playing him. But, like, we've seen with this Chiefs team that when they go up by 30, Mahomes has 5 touchdowns. Like, would anybody be surprised if Patrick Mahomes had 5 touchdowns in this game? Not at all. And I think Tyreek at 6,700. I mean, he scored the touchdown this year, but he's not gone for 100 yards once this year. I think that changes in this spot. I don't even hate Clyde Edwards-Helaire if you want to go to him at 6,500. Like, it's so hard to get a gauge on the snaps and the playing time for the Chiefs last week because they had a defensive touchdown, they had a special teams touchdown, and then their starters came out late in the fourth quarter. So their overall offense played 51 total snaps, but their starters played fewer. So I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is probably still like 65, you know, or 60-40, around that range in terms of the split. And of course, I don't think Le'Veon Bell, if we don't get a ton of running back value, is a bad play at his price because they're going to be up by 30 and they're going to be like, yo, Le'Veon, just go get a touchdown against your team. Not that he's, you know, metric wise the greatest play, but that's kind of where I'm at with the Chiefs. And then, for the Jets, I mean, Jameson Crowder still questionable. Breshad Perriman's in the concussion protocol. And then you have LaMichael Perine and Frank Gore. Like, just don't play a Jet and you'll probably feel good about it.
Well, I dove into this because this is also some of the stacks and some of the games where we want to pay up for this week and just plays. We're needing value. So I do want to mention something I came across that was really, really damn interesting to me. I looked at Mims, but the thing that pushed me off about him, because he has a decent corner matchup, like Charvarius Ward has not been good since he came back from the hand injury. He's allowing a 124 passer rating in his coverage, 63% catch rate. But the guy that kind of caught my eye here, if we're talking about Tyreek Hill and we're looking for value, and I know this is nasty, so if anybody needs to, you pinch your nose, I'm giving you the heads up right now. DeMarcus Robinson at 3,100. We're talking about the corners for the Jets on the outside are atrocious. They're terrible. Like, as much as we all want Mecole Hardman to be a thing, and dear God, I do, because he's amazing and he's fast as hell. But DeMarcus Robinson is a full-time player. You look at the last 2 weeks with Sammy Watkins, and Sammy Watkins is going to miss this game. Robinson is running just as many routes as Tyreek Hill. Robinson's main thing, like, he's out there running wind sprints when he does get targets. He basically runs two things for the Chiefs. He runs curls, and he runs go routes. And one of those things is amazing for fantasy. So if he's going to run go routes against a Jets team that's 32nd against deep passing, I'm not going to say, like, this is not going to be one of those, like, insane DeMarcus Robinson weeks where he goes for a long tutty.
Dude, I almost played him last week, and then I kind of got off him because you just didn't need to go there last week. But I almost played him last week. So, my thought process was similar to yours, but it's an even better matchup this week.
Yeah, and see, the thing is he's playing outside the entire time. He's a full-time player. I'm not saying that it's sexy, but we're looking for value, and a lot of these stacks that we want to pay up for, hell, even the mini correlations we're trying to get, you're going to need some type of value in that 3 to 4K range probably to make your lineups work.
You already know who my play in that range is at receiver. We'll talk about him later. But
oh yeah, I know where you're going, man. Drew, tell me, do you have any interest in Robinson, or is it just like, look, I get it, but I'm not getting that cute this week.
Yeah. So whenever I get questions in Discord about, hey, are you playing X, Y, and Z player, right? My first question is always, well, what are you playing, right? Is this a is this a 10-man, right? Is this a small single entry? Is this the Millie Maker? I don't know if D-Rob has that upside to win you the Millie Maker. I'm seeing his target share. His targets probably cap out around 6 or 7, right? And to our point earlier, the Jets probably aren't going to score enough to have to push it. But you're totally right. Value is going to be a little tough this week at 3.1 in a 10-man. Hell yeah. Why not?
All right. So moving on. Tennessee Titans are heading to Cincinnati. The over-under is set at 54.5. The Titans are favored by 6. This is one of my favorite games. I'm not even going to sit here. Like, this is a game I definitely want to stack. Drew, who's your favorite plays out of this game, man?
Yeah, I think this game can be stacked every way that you want. This is a game that should go back and forth. We saw this with my winning team last week, right? The Bengals are a team that at one point I thought we were going to see 55 passes from the Bengals last week, right? And I wouldn't be too surprised if we see it again this week. The Bengals are awful. Their run offense is awful, especially if Mixon is out. The Titans D across the board, especially their pass D, should be pretty penetrable. There's a few, and Adam, I'm curious who your low-end receiver is, because mine's actually in this game. But what do you guys think about this game?
I love it. I mean, Joe Burrow is like such a smash play, especially on DraftKings. I mean, like, he has hit the 300-yard bonus in five of six games. They're just throwing so much, obviously, in that Zach Taylor offense. I do have slight concerns because the offensive line's a little bit banged up, but I'd be more concerned if this was like a really good offensive line in the first place, but they've been bad all year. But just keep an eye on that. Jonah Williams has been practicing in their center. Bobby Hart hasn't been practicing either. Mixon didn't practice again on Thursday. Zach Taylor called him day to day. I would be shocked if he played, especially considering they have a week 9 bye. If you want to go back to Gio, it's not the worst option. I mean, he played nearly 80% of the snaps last week, had 93% of the running back carries. And since Mixon was drafted in 2017, in games Mixon's missed, Gio's averaging just under 18 touches and nearly 20 DK points per game. So he's been really good. I like Jonnu Smith and Tannehill stacks in this game a lot. Jonnu's been really non-existent the last two games. It's had a lot to do with the fact that A.J. Brown's been unstoppable, and of course A.J. Brown's absolutely in play as well. But we just saw the Bengals allow 3 touchdowns to the Browns tight ends last week. So I think Jonnu is – I think he's 4,100. I really like that price tag on him. And then you have, like, I think all of the Bengals receivers are in play if you want to play Burrow and Stack, because they're all really affordable. Boyd's the really only expensive one after his really strong game in week 7. But, like, T. Higgins is an every-down player. He's been fantastic. He's – probably still a little bit underpriced at 5,600, in my opinion. And the Titans, like, their defense has not been good. I mean, they're allowing teams to score a touchdown on around 81% of their red zone trips. It's the second worst rate in the NFL. So, like, you can score on Tennessee, and you can obviously score on Cincinnati, which is why a lot of people are going to this game, and for a good reason. And it seemed like he was dead, but A.J. Green is 4,500 on DK and has 24 targets the last 2 weeks.
I think you could stack either side of this game. I mean, the pace is going to be absolutely great. I mean, this is a game that's going to feature two teams that are top 9 in total pace. They're top 11 in neutral script pace. To me, this feels like last week, deja vu, because we know what Cincinnati wants to do. They want to throw the damn ball, like their first neutral script passing rate. And you have a team on the other side, like Cleveland was last week. They want to run the damn ball. And so I'm like, I guess my biggest question out of this is, Drew, to lock or not to lock Derrick Henry, I think is going to be a big thing, because he is going to be extremely chalk before I get any other plays out of the way in this game. What are your thoughts on Henry? Because I think this is a spot where you just eat the damn chalk and you play more, because he's going to sit here and smash them straight.
Can I ask Elliot what he thinks about Derrick Henry?
Oh, my God. I'm not... I wasn't gonna go there, man.
I was gonna go there. I love our boy Elliott, and I agree with Elliott. I mean, on DraftKings at 8K, Derrick Henry, in my opinion, is not really the play that you want to be. For your running backs, you want pass catching ability, multiple targets with, let's say, five catch upside. Derrick Henry's rarely going to do that, right? You want that 100-yard bonus. Derrick Henry's going to do that a lot. You want that rushing touchdown. Derrick Henry's going to do that a lot, right? But you're seeing, obviously, he has that kind of that huge home run ability of 40 points like we saw against Houston 2 weeks ago. Most of his other games are pretty reasonable in kind of that 20-25 carry range, two receptions with like 100 total yards and a pretty good touchdown equity, which brings you to about, let's say, 18 to 22 points. At 8K, that's pretty fadeable, and I would rather go with the pass catchers in this game.
And so getting to the pass catchers, man, like I'm not going to play AJ Green. Like I can't. I've seen enough out of what he's been doing. They had Malcolm Butler shadow a better receiver at this stage of his career. And I know people might hate me saying that, but Chase Claypool has more talent than a dusty AJ Green, at least at this point. We know where the ball was going to go, man. It's Tyler Boyd. Christian Fulton's probably out in this game, so he's going to face a backup slot corner who's been absolutely terrible.
And like, Juju Tennessee came back to life in the slot against him last week.
Mm-hmm. Dude, if Juju can get a heartbeat, then what the hell is Tyler Boyd? And for everybody that talks about, okay, well, Tyler Boyd's expensive. And I'm like, have you seen what this dude has been doing? Yes. Have you seen it? Because he's getting 12, 13 targets. He's going 11 receptions, above 100 yards. Like, he's leading the team in red zone targets, which, oh my gosh, also happens to be fourth in the NFL. So for to tell me that, like, Tyler Boyd, if you were to take the name off of it and looked at his usage and looked at his matchup, nobody would be balking at playing Tyler Boyd when he's 6'6". But yet, here we are, and I'm willing to go back to the well, man. Like, this game just feels so damn straightforward. It's Burrow. It's Boyd. It's Higgins. Because Higgins, after leaving last game, is not even carrying an injury designation. He hasn't missed a practice. He can absolutely burn the ghost that used to be Jonathan Joseph on the outside. And I love the Jonnu call. If you want to play Henry, that's fine. Like, I'm not opposed to anybody full game stacking this, because we're talking about you get off of the chalk, and it's either one of two moves. You fade it, or you full game stack it, or you play more. And this is a game where we're talking about there's a big discrepancy this week in a lot of games where there's pace or high totals versus slow and low. And I really think this is a game that you can full game stack and play like five dudes out of this game, like go 3-2 or even more, and I'm totally fine with it. Because if it goes nuclear and this game puts up a shit ton of points, you can absolutely like ship and bank a freaking GPP by game stacking this damn game. Drew, your thoughts. Like, would you just full game stack this baby?
Yeah, I would. I agree with you. Tyler Boyd is the primary target of this game. But you mentioned that everyone should forget the name Tyler Boyd. I'm gonna reverse this on you. Just close your eyes for a second. Forget about what game we're talking about even, right? Let me tell you that a guy is getting 13 targets last game, 11 targets the game before, is priced in potentially one of our favorite games of the week at an over under of 53.5, and his price tag on DraftKings is 4.5K in a very stackable offense. You're telling me you don't want that receiver? Because I do.
I have interest in AJ Green.
Oh.
Did I sell you?
Did a good job.
Damn it. Damn it, Drew. Yes, you're going to make me do it, aren't you?
DraftKings points, 15, 17 points the last two. He hasn't hit the 100-yard bonus.
He hasn't even scored yet, and he's got a ton of end zone targets.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. All right, fine. I'm going to have to get exposure to... I hate you a little bit right now, but I can't fault...
You'll thank me Sunday night.
I can't fault the process, man. All right, moving on. The Rams are heading to play the Dolphins in what is the first iteration of the Tua show. And so the over-under is set at 46. The Rams are favored by 4. Adam, do you like anybody out of this game? I'm guessing we haven't even talked anything about plays this week. I'm guessing this is not a game that you're probably going to stack, but am I wrong?
Yeah, I'm probably not stacking, but, like, what the hell does Myles Gaskin have to do to get a price bump? He should not – he's probably, in my opinion, the most mispriced player on the slate. So they obviously are coming off their bye in week 7, but in weeks 5 and 6, Myles Gaskin, you know, just during that stretch, 9th in running back attempts, 4th in receptions. Jordan Howard's not a thing anymore, so we don't have to worry about that. He's been their goal line back since Jordan Howard's been gone, which is really the only knock on him all season. And you've been able to run on the Rams a little bit. So I just think he's way too cheap. So I'll have a lot of Myles Gaskin exposure at that price. I'm completely off everybody else from that offense, though. I talked about my worries about Devontae Parker. I don't think he's going to see shadow coverage from Jalen Ramsey. He has not really been shadowing this year. If you look at Jeff Ratcliffe's shadow index on the site, like, he hasn't really been shadowing. But I'm more worried about what does Tua's presence do, because Ryan Fitzpatrick the last few years, over 20% of his pass attempts have been in the tight windows. It's a top 5 rate in the league. I don't think Tua is going to be as aggressive with his throws. So really for me, it's Gaskin. You can take a shot on the other side with Daryl Henderson because Miami's been so vulnerable against the run. And if there is a receiver to play from this game, it's probably Cooper Kupp, because the slot is where you target Miami with Nick Needham.
Drew, what do you think about this game, man?
We can move on. Those are my exact thoughts. Gaskin is too cheap. I'm interested in him in some catch-up roll offense, some dump offs that Tua is pressured at the line and needs to go quick, right? I could see that being a 18 to 20 carry and a 5 to 6 reception game for Gaskin at 5.23, whatever he is awesome. Henderson is really interesting to me because obviously they hate Cam Akers and he did something awful to the team in general. Who knows? Cooper Kupp, maybe. I don't see it. He would be the only one that I would consider. And then probably my highest ownership in this game is probably going to be Rams D, because we don't know what Tua is going to be.
I like the Dolphins defense too at 2,400. I don't think the Rams just come out and score 30. Jared Goff will turn the ball over a little bit, and I just think that price, you know, they'll let you kind of get whatever else you want elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every week is a punt defense week for me because that's just how I roll. Like, I don't care about if the rest of the damn lineup works and it's the min price D. Even last week, if it was like playing the damn Jets, I don't care at all. I'll play them. It's fine with me because you can pay nearly 4K and still get 3 points out of a defense. And if I pay 2K and get the same damn score, I'm zooming past you with a better lineup. So I'm down with it. But I like Daryl Henderson a lot in this game. I'm not on Gaskin because for everybody, and if you head over to FTN Daily, you look at the free tools we have on the site, you can look at offensive, defensive line, all the metrics that I'm about to sit here and dive through. The Rams, and everybody has been talking about they're 28th in adjusted line yards. I look at that as not so much. There needs to be context with that, because when you look at adjusted line yards versus second and open field yards, some of these can be volume stats. And adjusted line yards, if the Rams are a perfect example of this. They're 28th in adjusted line yards, but they're 9th and they're 6th in second and open field yards allowed. And so for me, that says, okay, people have been running at them a ton. They've allowed yardage, but you can't get to the second level and you're not breaking off big runs versus them. And behind a Dolphins offensive line, I'm not willing to roll a Gaskin, but I really, really like Daryl Henderson in this matchup for a few different reasons. One, the Rams are blocking like crazy. And the Dolphins, you can run all over them. The fact of it is, a lot of teams just haven't done so, but you can do that. Like, their defensive line is not great. And Henderson, for everybody that's worried about Malcolm Brown, if you dive into it a little bit deeper, Henderson really is on this backfield. And at 5,900, I think that he has multiple touchdown upside and it can go over 100 yards in this game. Like, over the last 2 weeks, Henderson has outrushed Brown 29-12. In the red zone, he has 8 totes versus 2 for Malcolm Brown. He has 2 targets versus Brown's 5, which Brown has been more involved in the passing game. But this is a Dolphins team that is, look, you can get through this team on the ground. They're one of the worst in red zone rushing defense in the league. I think that the Rams are going to get up. Even if Tua plays good in this game, I think that the Rams are going to win this game and win this game very, very handedly. And if they get in close, heck, if Tua throws a few picks in this one and we have some short fields, the Rams are 5th in rushing rate in the NFL in the red zone. I really like Daryl Henderson, and I know that like some people could be scared because of Malcolm Brown. I think if you look at his usage and stuff like that, I really think that this could be a blow-up spot, and a lot of people are going to shy away from Daryl Henderson in this one. Drew, what are your thoughts, man? Are you willing to sit here and kind of roll out some Henderson this week, or is that kind of like, considering the running back options, is it somebody you're more likely to be underweight on?
So we haven't really gotten to the bad weather games. There's a lot of merit to playing the running backs in those games. I will be focusing my running back exposure in those games because of that reason. But Daryl Henderson is someone who is currently in my player pool and quite frankly will likely stick for a lot of the same reasons that you did. For those of you that don't read Derek's O-line versus D-line article every week, it is one of my favorite articles that we put together here at FTN because of the breakdown that you do and the ability that you have to find plus matchups. To your point, I think Daryl Henderson has one of these plus matchups. He has 20 touch upside in a game that I quite frankly think the spread is wrong on. And at 5.9K, I'm in.
Yeah, I would not worry about the total in this game, but I think the spread is absolutely wrong. Like, I think that the Rams are going to truck stick the Dolphins this week. All right, so heading on over to a game that I don't have a ton of interest in, just to be honest. Like, the Colts are going to take on the Lions. This game just feels kind of gross, and I know the over-under set at 50, and it's a close spread. The Colts are favored by 3 in this game. There's not a lot of guys that are just jumping off the page at me. Adam, am I wrong?
So I think Jonathan Taylor is going to be super interesting on this slate because, Derek, like we, a lot of people also believe that the second half eruption spot is coming for Jonathan Taylor. We saw DeAndre Swift get just way more involved coming off Detroit's bye. So now the Colts coming off their bye. I mean, before their bye week, Jonathan Taylor had a season-high 73% touch rate. He handled 12 of the 13 running back carries. And potentially during their bye week, they dropped some more stuff to get him even more involved. Great spot here against the Lions. 1.5 rushing touchdowns per game allowed by Detroit is the 4th most in the NFL. And they just have not been a very good run defense. I think Taylor, I think the Colts still, the best chance they have to win games is to give the ball to Jonathan Taylor 17 to 20 times. I don't understand the total for this game being where it is because I don't really love anybody else from this entire game. The Colts defense was never as good as it was the first couple weeks, but they're still an above average defense, and now they get Darius Leonard back, and their splits with him active are massive. He is just a huge piece of that defense. I don't mind Kenny Galladay. I don't mind, you know, maybe Marvin Jones. But, like, I'm not playing Stafford when this team is running the ball so much, especially on early downs. Their passing rate's down about 3%. It's pissing me off. It's pissing a lot of people off. But I don't really like anybody on Detroit. Maybe Trey Burton is a cheap play, but now Mo Alley-Cox is back in practice. Like, for me, this game is strictly Jonathan Taylor.
This game is probably just a full fade for me.
Dude, why is the total where it is?
It's really damn weird. Like, I would be slamming the under in this game. Like, I don't understand. Like, look, Detroit's been wanting to run the damn ball more. You have a Colts defense that can defend the run. Detroit's backfield, they want to split up the touches. And even if, like, you're talking about with Jonathan Taylor, one of the reasons that I faded, and I, for as much shit as I've given Todd Gurley, I really looked into playing him last week because of what we see as far as line yards and the Lions and stuff like that, but they figured some stuff out. We're seeing a stat lag from how bad they were in week 1 to what they've done over the last few weeks. And since, if you take week 1 out of the equation, they're 13th in explosive run rate allowed. So they're actually stopping the run really well. So this game is a full fade for me. But Drew, is there anybody you like out of this game? Or dear God in heaven, are we just talking bullshit and you're willing to stack this?
No, you're not talking bullshit. I commented that I feel like the spread is wrong in the Rams-Dolphins game. I don't like to take too many of those stands on a week-to-week basis claiming that Vegas is wrong, because we all know Vegas is pretty damn efficient, right? With that being said, I totally agree. 50 seems like a very odd over-under. The Lions' run defense is 26th in the league in yards allowed per carry. Jonathan Taylor is absolutely in a smash spot for me. His usage is a little bit worse than I would want, but at 6.6K, there is no reason why he can't blast that and score two touchdowns, and we're talking 25-plus fantasy points, right? With that being said, because the over-under is 50, because it confuses me, because like both of you said, the public is going to think the exact same thing as us, I am interested in a couple other players in this game. That being Kenny Golladay, I feel like he has a fine matchup, and there's no reason, we've seen it multiple times with Kenny Golladay, 150-yard game, two touchdowns.
100 yards or a touchdown matchup. Every game he's played this year.
Exactly right. And maybe this is the week that he puts the two together, right? And if he does put the two together at also 6.6K, that's almost a must play, right? I would not play the two together, Kenny Golladay and Jonathan Taylor. One or the other, I'm not opposed to it. The other one that I want to mention, I want to get both of your takes on, someone who we think may be washed, but maybe I think this is actually a get right spot for T.Y. Hilton. There were rumblings the last few weeks that the offense wanted to run through him, that they wanted to focus on him, that Phillip Rivers and T.Y. Hilton were spending a lot of time together. We saw 10 targets 2 weeks ago, a subpar game the week before. But I wonder if coming out of the bye, if this isn't a get right spot for T.Y. Hilton. And maybe they figured it out a little bit, and we see an eruption spot at 4.9K.
Hey.
I know. I'm good. I know. It's gross. I'm looking at projected ownership at under 3% already. I mean, you never know.
Dude, all right. I'm not going to crap on it. All I'm going to say is I've chased that wagon in previous weeks, and I've done it enough to where the pain and the salt is still real. And I just can't, man. Like, I did it versus the Vikings. And, hell, I even played Phillip Rivers because I was like, ain't nobody want to play no Phillip Rivers. But if T.Y. Hilton has any juice left, he's got to get past the secondary. And then it just didn't go, man. I tried, and it didn't work.
Did I sell you more on A.J. Green then?
Yes, you did. Okay. You sell me more on A.J. Green, and you sell me more on A.J. Green because of the fact that Joe Burrow is a damn stud. Phillip Rivers, it looks like – he looks like a 50-year-old that, like, decided, like, you know what? I used to shot put back in high school. 30 years later, I might want to try to do that again. Yes, I could do that. I could definitely do that. No, baby, you can't. You can't do that anymore. You need to just go coach high school football. You got to be done. It's time to go, man. Like, bye. All right, so heading over to New England is going to take on Adams Bills. The over-under is set at a nasty 43. The Bills are favored by 3.5. This is another game, like, where I'm not willing to stack this game, man. There's one guy in this game that I got a lot of love for, but besides him, I don't know, man. Like, Drew, tell me what you think about this game, man.
Yeah, I agree. This isn't one of the worst weather games, but we are expected to see 20-mile-per-hour winds throughout the game. With that being said, again, we're recording this Thursday night. A lot could change. Keep it in your back of their mind. Check it multiple times Sunday morning, yep. Saturday night, what that projected weather is, because and the stats show it, right? Anything over 15, 20 miles per hour, that's when it starts impacting the offenses. Teams begin to run more for that very reason. It's not a stackable game, for my opinion. Even if this wasn't a windy game, it probably wouldn't be a stackable game. The most interesting player for me is potentially John Brown.
He's been full the last 2 days. He's going to play.
Perfect. Perfect. That would be my one interest level. Other than that, I'm not very interested in this game.
This game is so weird because, like, you have the wind factor. You have the fact that now Julian Edelman's out, which I wasn't going to play him anyway. But, like, when the slate first opened, I was kind of interested, despite his awful game last week, in Cam at his price, because I still think the Bills' defense is below average. But now I'm not. I just don't want to play anybody from this game outside of maybe some Josh Allen in tournaments, because the Patriots are the most man-heavy team in the NFL, and Josh Allen is still having some issues with zone, but he has torched man so far this year. And as we talk about a lot, running quarterbacks tend to have large rushing outputs against man defense because their backs are turned. And if this weather, you know, like Josh Allen could get there on rushing in this spot with the how man heavy the Patriots are. Plus, Stephon Gilmore's banged up. So, like, if he misses, that only helps Stephon Diggs, who, by the way, is also just unfair against man coverage. So, I'm still worried about the weather a little bit. But for me, like, even if this game was, you know, 75 degrees and sunny with no wind, I would still have minimal interest because the Patriots are a mess right now. And you don't want to really use either backfield, especially after Zach Moss played a season high in snaps last week with 35 and Devin Singletary played a season low in 40. And, okay, even if you make the argument that Zach Moss is the goal line back, well, he's not because Josh Allen plays for this team. So, yeah, for me, it's maybe some Josh Allen in tournaments. And that is literally it, because I am not playing. I mean, if N'Keal Harry plays, he's still in the concussion protocol. I didn't practice. So even if he played, he'd be up against Trey White. No, thank you. If he sits, Demir Bird's going to get Trey White. No, thank you. And if, like, I would have liked Beasley if John Brown was out, because that's where you've targeted New England as a slot. And Beasley's on a pace for a career year, but probably not going to happen with John Brown looking to play. So, yeah, it sounds weird, but the Bills should honestly do whatever they want in this game, because the Patriots kind of look like crap, so the Bills will lose. Should be fun.
I actually like Cole Beasley in this game. I wish he was cheaper. He's at 5'3", but you look at Beasley, man, like, the Bills have utilized him the last two games that they played versus the Patriots. Beasley had 13 targets and 12 targets, and you talked about it, Adam. You attack the Patriots in the slot. Like, that's where the corner matchup is, and if you get over to FTN Daily, you look at our advanced DVP wide receiver tool. I mean, New England is allowing the 7th most receiving yards per game and 8th most fantasy points to opposing slot wide receivers. So for a guy that I think that he's got a really, really high floor, and he's actually shown some freaking ceiling this year. Like, he scored in every game but one, he scored 12 or more points. He's surpassed 19 points in two games. Hell, he's coming off a game where he just had 11 catches and 112 yards, and we're talking about John Brown is probably not 100%. Yes, I know he's been practicing at full, but hell, it's been John Brown, and they've been ruling him out when he was practicing in previous weeks for who knows hell why. I think that Beasley is how the Bills, and for Josh Allen, he's looked off, dude. He's looked absolutely off, and he's been hyper-targeting Diggs. I think that this is a spot where they get him easy completions. If the weather is an issue, you're talking about five, just peppering Beasley with 5-yard, 10-yard throws, as well as, dude, quietly, Cole Beasley is leading this team in red zone targets. So he is, I got some love for Beasley, man.
So, like, I obviously am not in tune with the team by any means, but I like to think I follow them more than other people in the fantasy industry.
Oh, you're obsessed. Reasons. Don't try to Bills love here.
What I'm saying is I'm not a Bills beat reporter or anything like that, but I will say that, like, Cole Beasley is really important to what the Bills do. Like, it's just because he, and talent-wise, is the third player. Best receiver on the team, he is, like, absolutely monumental to what they do on offense. So, I love the Bees.
Drew, what's your thoughts here, man?
Yeah, the only thing I'll add there, I think you guys covered it really well. It's a very similar situation to me with the Chiefs and D-Rob, where it kind of depends on what tournament you're playing, right? Again, if this is a 10-man, hell yeah, why not, Cole Beasley? At 5.3 in a large GPP, for me, he doesn't have the upside. He would fit. He was in my lineups last week. I played a decent amount of him, obviously, with no John Brown. This week it would only be in a lineup if I felt like a game stack could potentially be the route, which is not the direction I'm going in right now.
Yeah. And that's fair, man. I really wish he was in that mid 4K range. Like, it kind of pisses me off. He's coming off like this hyper targeted 100-yard gain. I'm like, if that wasn't the case, you'd be in the 4Ks, man. And I would love you so much. Like, if he fits the build and he makes it, I like him as a play, but I'm not willing to be like, all right, you gotta get into the lineup. No! Like, I'm not gonna wedge him in there, man. So if he fits and he's the last dude in, and, you know, we're looking at, like, okay, who else is in that range? Beasley's a guy that I could see myself playing this week, but I would definitely, like, he's more like, I play a lot of single entry 3-max. He's more of a 1-of-3 guy, and he's definitely not going to be a 3-of-3. So,
yeah.
So while you're setting your lineups, listening to this amazing podcast, and I know that we're all talking about it, you're setting your lineups on a late Saturday night when you're in the Discord and you're hearing all of us going back and forth, and you're probably devising all the ways that you're going to spend these future DFS millions. You got to head over to pristineauction.com. You can start bidding on thousands of items for as little as a dollar, and they have daily auctions for all kinds of beautiful items, helmets, jerseys, footballs, all sorts of awesomeness. Over 8,000 items in their auctions at all times. You're going to find that must-have item for your office, your living room, wherever, in their auctions. So head over to pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Use the promo code FTN for $10 off your first invoice and let them know we sent you. All right, boys, so Las Vegas Raiders are heading to play the Cleveland Browns, and oh, but Jesus, I don't want to like Carr, but I do. On this game, the over-under is set at 53.5. The Browns are favored by 2.5. Drew, talk me off the ledge, man. Talk me off the ledge.
So I can't other than the win. I know I've mentioned win a couple times, but we've seen the Browns in high-paced games put up some points, crazily enough. Obviously, we got to talk about what their weapons look like with no Odell. But I don't see any reason why the Browns can't put up some points in a cheap stack against the Raiders, who are ranked 28th in the league yards allowed per pass, against the Browns' run with Kareem Hunt, who can really put it together pretty well. I think we've yet to see the ceiling game from Kareem Hunt. I think this is a possibility. I think he could rip off some long runs. I think Derek Carr could run it back. Honestly, we have a lot of potential in this game. This was one that I really like stacking potential before I looked at the weather, and now I'm kind of on the fence about it. What do you guys think?
Adam, do you like this game? Because I actually really love this game. And I'll give all my reasons here in a second, but what do you think, dude?
I'm not as worried about the win in this game because while he's been a little bit more aggressive this year, this Raiders offense is still predicated off running the football and Derek Carr with these short intermediate passes. And the guy I want to pair him with is Darren Waller anyway, and he's getting all the intermediate stuff. So I'm not as worried. And with Cleveland, like, I just want to play Kareem Hunt, so I don't really care about the win at all.
Yep.
But yeah, like, Kareem Hunt, this in this spot, I mean, 50% of the touchdowns allowed by the Raiders this year have come via the run. It's the second highest rate, or third highest rate in the NFL. They're allowing 2 rushing touchdowns per game. That's the highest mark in the NFL. And Kareem Hunt, like, I know he hasn't had, like, the 35-point game or anything like that, but I think he's still a little too cheap under 7K given the usage he's going to see. So I like Kareem Hunt. I like Derek Carr at his price. Like, Derek Carr has been low-key kind of good this year, especially in fantasy. So at his price, he really doesn't have to do much anyway, and you don't need him to hit these deep passes through the wind. And the Browns, we've talked about this a lot in this podcast, but they've been a pass funnel this year. 75.7% of the yardage allowed by Cleveland has come through the air, the fifth highest rate in the league. So I really like my first build in terms of a stack in tournaments this week has been Carr to Waller and running it back with Kareem Hunt. Like, I really like that lineup construction this week. And then you have the rest of the Cleveland situation where Austin Hooper is probably not going to play again with the appendectomy. We saw Harrison Bryant run a little bit more routes and play a little bit more snaps than Njoku. Both scored a touchdown, and Bryant scored twice. And now you have Rashard Higgins with Odell Beckham out. I mean, Higgins is 4,200. He ran a route on every single one of Baker Mayfield's dropbacks last week, and he had an 84% snap share, which led all Cleveland receivers. And we know this Raiders defense is just, you know, not too strong. So I think he'll be relatively popular. I don't think he's a bad play by any means. I think we could easily see – I mean, Cleveland was already running 12 personnel a lot anyway because they have Kevin Stefanski and they have 3 really capable tight ends. I could see them bumping it up a little bit more now with Odell Beckham out. So I think that's going to be an interesting little wrinkle to watch with their usage in the first game without Odell Beckham.
I'm really kind of curious where Jarvis Landry and Rashad Higgins come in as far as ownership goes, because if everybody's going to go to Rashad Higgins, and I'm not saying I don't like him in this game, I do like him, but if all the ownership goes to Higgins and people like are going to Carr and they're not stacking Baker, dude, I'm just going to sit here and pivot. I'm going to go to Landry. Like, if he's sub five or if he's, like, really, really low compared to Higgins and Higgins is popular, then I'm more likely to play Landry because, like you're talking about, the Browns are going to run a bunch of 12 and 13 personnel. They're going to put their guys on the outside. And the outside corners for the Raiders are terrible, man. Like, Nevin Lawson's not good. Two touchdowns, 122 passer rating. Mullen on the other side is not great either. Three touchdowns and a 123 passer rating. They're trash, man. And if Landry and Higgins are going to be on the outside, like, I'm not opposed to game stacking this. I like this game a ton. I think the pace is going to be okay. I think that this could be a high-scoring affair. I love Kareem Hunt because for all the reasons y'all stated, we haven't seen a ceiling game. I thought it was coming last week.
Yeah.
I definitely think it could be coming this week because the Raiders can't stop the damn run to save their lives. And I'm willing to sit and roll out some Henry Ruggs. Like, if wind concerns really are worrisome for people – and I'm not saying that the wind can't be an issue, but also if people, because we do see that in the DFS streets, like people get into wind and weather narratives and they fade good plays. If people are not going to be on Henry Ruggs, I think he still has a massive ceiling in this game because where you attack the Browns is on the outside versus Denzel Ward and in the slot versus Kevin Johnson. And Ruggs is playing 45% in the slot or he is lining up opposite from Denzel Ward, and Denzel Ward just got roasted last week. Like, dude's been terrible this year. Yeah. Four touchdowns and a 107 passer rating. Like, Ruggs has the speed to get past this dude.
Cleveland is just really bad in the slot. And oh, by the way, didn't mention it when we were talking about Derek Carr, but Myles Garrett hasn't practiced yet this week, and he's been probably the best pass rusher in the NFL this year. So something.
So that's the case. The Browns are not going to get pressure on Carr. He's going to have all freaking day to sit back there, but. Somebody tell me that, like, are we actually considering, even mildly considering Nelson Agholor, or is he just a damn trap?
I'm not.
So I was going to jump there. I think there is a real chance that Nelson Agholor has surpassed Henry Ruggs in terms of interest level, mm-hmm. in terms of primary targets in this offense. We saw it last week. I have not gone back and actually seen that game, but we're looking at 9 targets versus Henry Ruggs' 2, right? There is for Henry Ruggs. Sorry to cut him short a target there. But there is a real chance that Nelson Agholor has surpassed him as a primary target, or let's say second target after Waller. I'm not opposed to it. And I'm already looking at early ownership. This is going to change a ton, right? But I'm looking at 1% ownership against Henry Ruggs 6, right? And at 4.7K to pay for Nelson Agholor when no one's injured on the team seems really, really gross. But removing names, I don't want to argue against that production that we saw last week against a really tough Tampa Bay Bucks defense. I'm a little interested in it in some game stacks.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love this game. I think that, so just like we're talking about with Cleveland and Cincinnati last week, I think that some of these games, if these teams tell you what the hell they want to do, like one team passes a crap ton, one team runs a lot in neutral script, and if the line is right and it's close, and Vegas that we're talking about is sharp, then we know what the teams want to do. Then why would you not want to stack up certain parts and pieces of a game if you're like, okay, yeah. They're going to throw. Okay,
don't
they're going to run.
Yep.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be hard. Like, DFS is hard enough. Why make it harder, man? If we know what the teams are going to do.
Yeah, I just, I don't mind sprinkling in one of the secondary receivers, but it's going to be really difficult for me not to just play Darren Waller.
Yeah.
Especially Price as a tight end 4. Like, I understand that may not be egregious, but like, I don't think he should be cheaper than Mark Andrews right now with just the usage Darren Waller is getting. And that's something I completely missed on this offseason. I was worried that the addition of Ruggs and Agholor and the running backs, and he hasn't really played, but Bryan Edwards, I thought that would really hurt Waller's target share, and it has just not at all.
Yeah, that's fair.
I feel like there are so many different ways to stack this game. It's really interesting. We haven't talked too much about the Browns receivers. I feel like it's worth just mentioning. I know you mentioned Higgins, Landry in a game stack as well. Honestly, even Donovan Peoples-Jones, which sounds really, really crazy, but as soon as Odell came out, Donovan played a good bit and had 3 receptions for 56 yards and a touchdown. In some garbage catch-up time, right? I mean, who knows if that's going to be duplicated, but in a crazy game stack, why not?
It wasn't really – like, he's their wide receiver 3 now. because Landry's obviously their slot guy, and like Donovan Peoples-Jones, like that was the game winning touchdown. Like he scored the game winning touchdown.
All right, so heading over to the Vikings are going to go to Green Bay, take on the Cheeseheads. The over-under is set at 54. Green Bay is favored by 6.5. This is another game that's just standing out. It's jumping off the page for me. I love me some Aaron Rodgers in this game. I think that we've seen enough out of this Packers offense. I mean, shoot, man. The people are not giving it enough love. Like, they are running at the highest rate in the NFL. They are first in neutral script pace. I think that this is a game that absolutely can shoot out. I think this game reminds me so freaking much of the Vikings versus the Falcons in that I see this game as one that could just go nuclear. And I've got a lot of love for Aaron Rodgers in this game. I don't want to think I'm going to run it back with Jamal Williams. I think that he's going to get a ton of work, but the Vikings have been good on the ground against the run. It's their secondary that's absolutely atrocious. So for me, the standout plays in this game are Aaron Rodgers, obviously Davante Adams. I don't need to give you stats about how damn good Davante Adams is just to know that he is good at football. So you play him. And none of the corners on the Minnesota side can freaking stay with him. I do want to say that the Vikings are amongst the worst teams in the NFL at guarding against the deep pass. And if Aaron Rodgers is going to chuck it deep, I know he's burned us in recent weeks for anybody that has even decided to possibly play him. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is a guy that I think you can go back to this week.
Dude, last time you were on him, you nailed it. It was week one in the same spot.
He had 19 points, man. He went off. Nobody wanted to play him, and I think he was like 2% owned in that game.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back there. He's slightly cheaper. He's under 4K.
I'm gonna go back there, man. And I've seen some stuff in the Twitter streets about Adam Thielen and how good he is versus Jair Alexander. Why do people not want to play Justin Jefferson? Like, if you're not gonna go against Alexander, Kevin King and Josh Jackson, they don't scare me. It doesn't matter if King plays or he doesn't. Neither one of those corners are any damn good. Like, why do people not just want to, like, even at the price? Justin Jefferson has been a freaking stud. Like, tell me, Drew, why I don't play Justin Jefferson in this damn spot. And what are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, you do play Justin Jefferson. He's a great player. This is a great spot for him. I think Adam Thielen's in play. I think the entire game stack is in play. My first question, you already answered it, was if we are going to stack the Packers, which I strongly believe is a viable solution this week, who else do you play in addition, right? And I think MVS is a play. Maybe Tanyan for 4.6, I think he is a decent play as well. All of which are decent stack options. I've brought this up a couple times, though, but we also need to talk about weather. And when I see everyone going to the stack of this game, I almost wonder if this isn't potentially a running game. And I think Aaron Jones is going to play. I know he didn't practice today, but with how close he was to playing last week, according to him, he was good to play. I think this could be one of those games where Adams doesn't score, but still gets a significant amount of yardage. And Aaron Jones pushes in too. And I think there's a lot of potential for him to be the winning play in this game at sneaky low ownership.
I'm playing like whoever's starting at running back. If Jamal Williams is a starter, I'm still playing him at 6,100. AJ Dillon was not a thing last week. They trust Jamal Williams, you know, more so than Aaron Jones in certain situations. So I don't see why if Aaron Jones was out, they would just all of a sudden be like, all right, AJ Dillon, we didn't give you work last week, but here's some more work. The thing with the Packers is they're super cautious with their injuries. So, like, if Jones can't get in limited tomorrow on Friday, like, I don't think he's playing personally. So we'll have to see. Davante Adams, I mean, we saw what he did last week, and Minnesota secondary is bad enough, but Cameron Dantzler's on the COVID list. Holton Hill and Mike Hughes haven't practiced this week, so I literally couldn't tell you who's going to be covering Davante Adams this week. The answer is probably nobody because they'll be practicing COVID. They'll be practicing their COVID protocols by maintaining 6 feet from Davante Adams all afternoon. That's I'll just leave it at that.
Very nice.
I like Dalvin Cook here a lot. I understand that the weather is not great, but he is healthy. He is in a smash spot, and I don't think he's going to be limited at all. I like the price on him. I like the usage he's been getting when he's been on the field. So I really like Dalvin Cook if I'm not playing Kareem Hunt or going up to Henry or Alvin Kamara, one of those guys. And I still like Thielen in tournaments. Like, he had 4 for 66 and a touchdown in shadow coverage from Jair Alexander in week one, and he shadowed him on 81.5% of his routes. Jair's good, but Jair's more of a corner where it's like, I'm not going to play, you know, a middling receiver when he's against him. But Adam Thielen can get his against anybody, so I don't really care. So I still love Thielen GPPs. And you just, it's one of those games where you just know who to run it back with, right? Like, if you want to play Rodgers and Aaron Jones and Devontae, or Rodgers, Adams, and MVS, you run it back with Thielen, Cook, or Justin Jefferson. Or Irv Smith, who's 3K. He continues to play more snaps and run more routes from weeks.
Tell me, Adam.
It's the same thing I mentioned on the waiver podcast, man, or the trade podcast. From weeks 5 to 6, remember Minnesota was on a bye in week 7. Irv Smith, 8th among all tight ends in routes run. Their 12 personnel has been increasing. He's been playing in the slot more, and he's 3K. So if he goes for that 5 for 50 he's been getting you the last couple weeks at 3K, you're still good to go.
Hashtag let Irv swerve.
Got
baby.
A couple tweets. I was hype.
It has to be mentioned.
You guys cracked me up last week. I wasn't going to steal your thunder there. I agree. He's a great play. And I totally agree. Dalvin Cook, I mean, his floor in this offense with how many touches he gets, you got to assume he's healthy now. You're talking a 17-point floor with upside of 30-plus. I mean, again, in this game where there are going to be so many game stacks, I don't see why – call it half of your lineup shouldn't have either Dalvin Cook or Aaron Jones. You pick one of the running games and you roll with it as a lot of leverage against some game stacks. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like that call. I like that call a whole lot because I think that if the weather is a huge factor here, then both of these games, and if we're all wrong, like if they don't throw and stuff like that, then you're surpassing the field, man, especially if they come in at lower ownership. All right, so heading over to the Chargers are going to take on the Broncos. The over-under is set at 44.5. The Chargers are favored by 3. This game just feels like a pretty much a void for me. I mean, honestly, and I've been all over Keenan Allen in previous weeks because his usage, his volume, everything is absolutely elite. But looking at this game as a whole, the only guy that I got a little bit of interest in is Noah Fant. The Chargers are bottom basement against the tight end position. Fant was one of the – I mean, he was running routes on nearly 80% of dropbacks before the injury, and they eased him back in last week. I like him in this spot, but I'm not even going to go back to Keenan Allen in this matchup, man. Like, Bryce Callahan in the slot for the Broncos has been really, really stinking good coming off of, like, actually seeing him healthy and playing. The dude is only allowing 16.5 passer rating in his coverage in the slot. Like, that is a spot where we're talking about, like, if people are saying, okay, there's noise to cornerback matchups and stuff like that. Okay, when I can tell you somebody is going to see somebody for about 50% of the game because he plays a certain area of the field that other said guy plays on the field, then it's not noise. It's real.
But I would care if Keenan Allen's price wasn't broken.
It is broken, but here's the thing. Herbert got to throw the ball a lot more. What are your thoughts on this Denver defense? Because I think that they're actually pretty damn good, man. Like, I think that outside of the slot where you could attack in previous weeks, this defense is sneaky, quiet, good. And it's not one that I've really, like, rushed to attack in previous weeks.
No, Bradley Chubb's playing really well. Like, they're not a team I'm just running to play guys against, but Keenan Allen's price is just, it's just not accurate. I just don't understand it. But honestly, like, that's all I'm going, that's the only direction I'm going from the entire Chargers team. Like, Justin Herbert is awesome, but in this spot at that price, I'll look elsewhere. There's two questions that you have to make or ask yourself in this game. One, we already established, why is Keenan Allen's price tag broken? The second is, are you going to go to Melvin Gordon and get potentially 20 touches if Philip Lindsay's ruled out? I'm probably leaning towards, like, maybe a sprinkle of him if Lindsay's out. If Lindsay's in somehow, if he gets cleared, it's a full 50-50 split like it's been in the limited sample we've seen. But when Lindsay's been out, it's been 17 to 20 touches for Gordon. And, oh, by the way, he's facing his former team.
I'm just kind of curious if Gordon gets popular because people just saw James Robinson absolutely just steamroll this team. And I'm not going to – this game overall just feels like it could get popular. And I honestly think that this game could be slow. I think this game could be low scoring. And I just don't have a really good feel on this game, like ways or avenues for this game to shoot out. Drew, is this a game that you like?
Both of these teams are kind of middle of the road in terms of pace. I don't see it as being a very high scoring affair. I think both of these defenses are better than expected. I know the Chargers defense is crazy banged up every single year. It is what it is. I'm a lifelong Charger fan, so it's a little hurtful sometimes.
Were you scared that they were going to lose last week?
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm scared they're going to lose every week in the most brutal way possible, just like my tournament last week, but we'll move on from that. Adam, I know you play a lot of basketball DFS, as do I. Revenge games are certainly a thing there. I have not found revenge games to necessarily be a thing in football.
There's more variance because, like, I use this example all the time, but it's probably a bad one because he hasn't played like 2 years. But, you know, John Wall can touch the basketball X amount of times in a basketball game, whereas Melvin Gordon, it's a little bit easier for a running back, right? But, yeah, like, I will say, though, like, there's obvious, like, at the end of the day, that's just more of a, by the way, the real factor is, he's going to see 17 to 20 touches if Philip Lindsay's out. But I do agree. It's just a lot more evident in basketball.
Yeah, and to wrap it up, the only one that was interesting to me as well is Keenan Allen at 6.2. That's crazy. The only thing that scares me is he's really not that breakaway talent. He's very talented, but he doesn't have that upside, right, where he's not going to break away 60, 70-yard play like a Will Fuller, like a you name it, right? He is middle of the field, 10, 12 targets. 8-10 catches for 90 yards and maybe a touchdown, right? That's not going to win you a huge GPP. I think at this price tag, it's a great cash game play. I think it's a great small single entry play. I don't really see the upside in something like the Millie Maker.
Well, sure. So for the price point, and for me, this is really clear. Justin Jefferson or Keenan Allen? Which one are you going with, Drew?
Jefferson.
I do agree. Same. Jefferson has the higher ceiling.
Hands down, I think the game environment, I think everything is just more ripe for that game to go off. And pretty much at the same price point, I just don't see it for Keenan Allen, man. For as much as they're leaving him around the same spot, and that's fine because I think he's going to dud here. And then we're going to walk into next week and Keenan Allen's still going to be in the mid to low sixes. Hell, please, baby. Please, sweet baby Jesus, let him get to 5.9. Please, please. I probably would die just looking at the price. But moving on, Saints versus the Bears. This game just it's another nasty one, man.
This game sucks.
The over-under is 44. Saints are favored by 4. This game is going to be a full avoid for me. I think it's either you play Alvin Kamara or I play nobody out of this game. Allen Robinson is in concussion protocol. Maybe Michael Thomas plays, but what version of Michael Thomas we get versus a really damn good Chicago secondary? It's really Alvin Kamara or I want nobody from this game. But Drew, what are your thoughts here, man?
Yeah, so we saw this last week and it didn't work, so maybe it's not going to happen again. But there was a lot of talk around Latavius Murray for the Saints against the Panthers. You can take your 10, your 8 Latavius Murray carries and your 1 target at 4.3K, it's not worth it to me, right? And I think he's going to pick up. I think he's going to be named in a couple other sources this week. I just don't see it. I agree. It's a very, very gross game. There's no one from the Bears that interests me except potentially, very potentially, a cheap receiver like Mooney if A-Rob is out.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, it's Kamara, and that's it for me.
I thought about Mooney, man. I looked at him, and then I stopped and I paused for a second, and I said, I'm going to put real American dollars behind the ability for Nick Foles to hit Mooney deep.
Yeah.
And then
we saw how bad that was against Tampa Bay.
And then I said, no, I kept moving.
Dude's still open right now as we speak, and Foles couldn't hit him. But I agree. It's Kamara because he's ridiculously good at football. If Michael Thomas plays, maybe saps some of the pass-catching upside that Kamara usually has, but I don't really envision that. And while we're on the revenge tour, if you want to play Jimmy Graham, go ahead. But no, in all seriousness, I'm literally only playing Kamara and the Saints defense from this entire game.
Really quick, just because we were talking about Derrick Henry and Alvin Kamara, I think is going to have lesser ownership than Henry, or maybe around the same. Do me a favor, put those two game logs side by side. If you're really considering Derrick Henry, put those two side by side and just visualize how much better Kamara is a play in every single week than Derrick Henry. You can just tell based on those game logs.
Yep. I don't disagree. And so here's one of the things that I think that people get so hung up about is names. We were talking about Tyler Boyd previously.
I agree.
About all these different players. They get stuck on names, and they're like, but I don't want to pay that much. Like the previous weeks when James Robinson
was
smashing.
Mike Davis the first 3 weeks? People probably didn't play him.
Mike Davis!
Yeah.
People are like, I don't want to pay that much for this guy. And I'm like, what in the hell is wrong with you? Like, the absolute hell is wrong with you. The guy is getting this type of usage. He's scoring weekly. He's getting 80 or 90% of the snaps. Like, people need to take the names. If you have to sit here and make yourself a spreadsheet and hide the names, just tape yourself a piece of paper up to your computer screen like a freaking five-year-old and say, okay, who are the best plays? And then you take said piece of paper off of your computer and you say, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. That is how you should make your DFS lineups, apparently, because you just need to take the names out of it. Go with usage, go with upside, go with production, and stop worrying about the damn names that are attached to these guys and go with good, solid plays. But moving over to another game we're talking about, people are not going to want to play this guy, and I got a lot of love for him in this spot. San Francisco plays Seattle. The over-under is set at 54. Seattle is favored by 3, and I'm going in, man. I'm going to play some Jimmy G this week. Drew, are you with me?
Yeah, I am. I think the Seahawks, the new Hawks, the way that they play, it just every week we are seeing this as a potential shootout, right? Or an actual shootout. Over under at 54. Jimmy G, we've seen it in the past, right? He can put up some scores. The Seattle Seahawks D is literally the worst in the league in terms of pass rating, yards per allowed per pass. There's no reason why the 49ers can't put up some points, why Jimmy G can't put up some points. The question is, and I talked about this earlier, is, in my opinion, you want at least a three-man stack. I think it's a very, very unique three-man stack with this team. I think it's Jimmy G. I think it's Jerick McKinnon, and I think it's Kittle.
Really?
How dare you in D-Bro's presence?
I feel like that was just said, one, to hurt me, and two, to intrigue me. So, why is it McKinnon, Drew? Tell me.
So, I honestly need to read a little bit more this week in terms of what the beat writers are saying. It was extremely weird usage last week, right? We saw Jeff Wilson Jr. come in essentially out of nowhere. He was literally in, I think, for a little while, the Millie Maker. Millie winning lineup at 0.01%, something crazy like that. I think Jerick McKinnon is a legit talent. We've all seen those spark rating scores from years ago when everyone was really high on him. I think the Seahawks allow a lot of pass catching to the opposing running backs. And I think Jerick McKinnon really could put up a 15-plus game. We have a sub who is very active in the Discord. I'm going to give him a little shout-out here. Jake Anderson, who often brings up the fact that this is, as a running back group, the highest scoring running back group in the entire league, right? We are now potentially a man short, maybe two men short. We'll see what Tevin Coleman's situation is. But if that's the case, there is no reason why potentially Hasty and McKinnon can't put up points. If that's where you're going, D-Bro, there's no reason why they can't be played. But Jerick McKinnon is right now where I'm leaning towards.
So I don't want to steal his thunder. I'm all in on, like, I love Jimmy G in this spot. I think the run back for Seattle, I have a lot of love for Tyler Lockett. I know Kwon Williams is probably going to play, but him and Jamar Taylor, yes, fine. Give me Tyler Lockett and his blazing speed versus a dude that is coming off a knee injury, or Jamar Taylor, who, if you want to go look at his game logs for the last, like, 5 or 6 years, he's not good at football at all, like covering the slot, covering fast receivers, covering any receivers, covering anybody, the ghost of old receivers, it does not matter. I'm gonna turn this over to Adam because he threw this name into our Slack conversation at the very beginning of the week, and I gave him pushback because I told him I was on another San Francisco receiver, And after diving into it, if people want to head over to FTN Daily, you want to look at my 10 stats article, I'm right there with you, Adam. Tell me why you love Kendrick Bourne.
I've always thought he was an underrated player in the first place. It's just he's, for his entire career with the Niners, he's been like a third or fourth receiver, let alone receiving option, and this is a run-first team. But you look at Kendrick Bourne, I mean, he's 3,500, right? I mean, that's the appeal really in itself. But he's played, there's been two games this year where the Niners have had Brandon Ayuk, but have been without Deebo. It's been, I think it was weeks 2 and 3. He had 11 targets in those two games. He's running a ton of routes when he's, you know, the wide receiver one or two on this team. And we talk about it, like, they aren't going to be able to run the ball as efficiently because they're just missing guys. And the fact that Seattle's been such a pass funnel anyway, they've been good against the run, so they might have to throw more. And it's more of a concentrated offense without Deebo. Then you add the fact that he's going to line up on the right, where Seattle is allowing a league-high 18 fantasy points per game to right receivers. And he's going to see Shaquille Griffin, who's allowing over 2 fantasy points per target and 5 touchdowns in coverage. So, not that Brandon Ayuk's a bad play, but I like going down to 3,500. Like, you cannot tell me with a straight face right now that you know for a fact Brandon Ayuk is getting more targets than Kendrick Bourne. He might get more touches because he might get 2 carries, but I can't say for a fact he's going to get more targets. And Kendrick Bourne's 3,500, so there's my take on my favorite value play this week.
I love Kendrick Bourne this week, and I love him to an unhealthy level right now. For all the reasons that you said, Shaquille Griffin is absolutely terrible. And the San Francisco 49ers, for we're talking about alignments, we're talking about cornerback matchups, okay? Ayuk has been playing on the left side of the field over 52% of his snaps. And we talk about this, like, if you head over and you look at, like, where Bourne has played in previous weeks, yes, he's played a lot out of the slot. San Francisco doesn't run 11 personnel. Like, they are legit the second lowest team and only 41% in the NFL at 11 personnel. So if he ain't lining up on the left, he's going to be on the right. And Griffin is a dude we have picked on in every single week because he sucks. He's terrible. Kendrick Bourne is a guy that I think they can win on the outside. San Francisco is going to play action. They're going to get him some looks. At 3,500, I think that he's got upside. And as crazy as it sounds, I really, really love him. Because we're talking about, this is a slate, if you want to play all the dudes, you got to find value. And at 3,500, he opens up a ton for your lineups. Drew, will you play any Kendrick Bourne this week?
$3,500 pass catcher who, let's say, averages 6 to 7 targets in this situation in a very high scoring game with 3 to 4 touchdowns for the team. There's no reason that I can logically state that he's a bad play. I just think we have a high concentration of targets with Kittle. I think McKinnon will get a lot of run out of this backfield, especially if Tevin Coleman's out. I think Ayuk is a legitimate talent. Of course, his price tag's a little tough. It's just a little bit of a question mark, and I totally see the validity of it.
Yeah, I think Ayuk gets popular, man. I'll be honest, everybody's going to peg him for the Deebo role, and I actually think that Bourne is not only. I think that Ayuk gets popular. I think this game is going to be popular. I think that Bourne, sir, there's a lot of boxes checked here, man. I think that one, he's cheap as dirt. He's dirt cheap. Two, I think that he's great leverage off of where I think Ayuk is going to be popular and Kittle is going to be popular. So if Kittle goes for a touchdown and has a great game, he's still 7K. If Bourne catches 2 touchdowns, then I love him, man, for all these different reasons.
Yeah, and the thing with Ayuk, if he's going to be chalk, he's the, like, not that he can't have a good game, but he's, like, the ideal player to fade at a high roster percentage because he's a receiver, first of all, and he's a receiver on a low volume passing offense. So, like, Brandon Ayuk is not going to get, you know, 8 to 11 targets in this game. I mean, he might if they throw 45 times, but even in this game, you don't expect the Niners to ever throw 45 times. So, for me, like, not that he's a bad play, but I think Kendrick Bourne has the same, if not more, target potential at, you know, over $2,000 difference in price.
Yeah, this is a big ownership leverage spot for me. Keep an eye on what Kyle Murray puts out in terms of his ownership projections, which are just incredible, dead on every single week. If it looks like Ayuk is significantly above Bourne, then obviously Bourne. If Bourne creeps up, because to be honest, I have heard him in a couple other sources already, that makes me a little bit concerned that he actually gets a little bit of run in terms of ownership. So, yeah, I totally see it going both ways. I just say keep an eye on what Kyle Murray puts out in terms of ownership.
Are we playing any running backs in this game, D-Bro? I know Drew mentioned
the I'm not.
I don't think I'm going to.
I'm all covered.
Hyde, Carson, and Homer were out of practice Thursday. Like, if DJ Dallas is the only one there, maybe, but, like, it's more of a wait and see for me right now. And I know you wrote up Jimmy Garoppolo in your streamer article, and whenever I think about using Jimmy G, I want him in spots where he can really make a difference in play action, and you wrote about that. So I thought that was interesting if you want to bring that up.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Seattle was not great versus play action last year. Like, they were one of the worst teams in the NFL. I mean, they were 24th in yards per play allowed on play action. And Jimmy G, man, like, I mean, we know that there are certain teams. I mean, dear God, you can't watch a Titans game without hearing play action, play action, play action. You might as well, I mean, if you were to play a drinking game and either San Francisco is on the television or the Titans are playing, you're going to be blackout drunk before the first quarter is even over, considering. But if we're talking about play action, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to – they're going to utilize it, man. It's one of Shanahan's biggest things, and – Seattle has been vulnerable versus play action. I mean, they're allowing the fourth highest passer rating on play action and the sixth highest touchdown percentage through the air on play action throws. So that's why my thing is, like, Jimmy Garoppolo can only throw 35, maybe 40 times in this game, and 40 is probably pushing it. But if I'm saying that both of these run defenses are good and they're still going to run to set up the play action, he doesn't have to have the volume to sit here and chuck it deep or to have yards after a catch. So I like this game overall, man. Any final thoughts here, Drew?
No, I would just say this game is so stackable. We didn't really talk about the Seahawks stack, but we already know what to do,
yeah,
right?
Like you can play them every
exactly.
single week.
The only thing that I might say there is we have Russ at 7.8 and Lockett and DK over 7K. That's pricey, right?
That's Running why you play Kendrick Bourne, because then you get the correlation,
exactly.
Baby.
Totally agree. That's all I got in this game. It's a great game from all angles.
Absolutely, man. Well, that is our game-by-game breakdown for the main slate. So we are going to have also, because we started this last week, you need to head over to FTNDaily.com and check out our premium podcast covering the Sunday and Monday night games. We're going to fire this back up with Drew. Head over there, tune in, get ready for those games. Drew, tell all the good people where you're at on Twitter, all the good things that you're doing for FTN Daily.
Yeah, first of all, guys, thanks so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun. Find me on Twitter at FantasyGuruDrew. At FTN, I post my exposures every single week. Saturday night, I post them up. I update them Sunday morning before lock. Saturday night, I do a coaching session with Derek and a lot of the pros here at FTN where we chat out our plays. We talk about who our favorite stacks are. Again, this is a Thursday night podcast. A lot's going to change in the next 48 hours. Who knows what happens? So jump in, chat with us. We'll be there for a few hours for us, starting at 9 Pacific. Midnight Eastern. We'll be there for a while. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, baby. Light the cigars and pour the drinks. It is always the Saturday night action. So Adam and I are going to be back next week, as always, rocking four episodes. You need to get tuned in. If this is your first time tuning into the podcast, one, welcome. Two, get ready for the Sunday night recap that Adam is going to be rolling through all of the game action, giving you his highest takeaways for that, looking towards week 9. So for this episode, for Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at APPfeiffer24, and at ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.